There you go. It's called The Great Setup. Dr. David Martin, part one, and we'll be hearing part two probably Monday next week. Monday or Tuesday next week, we'll hear part two. Or if you want to get over to Substack, I think it's Makish MD, or Marcus, rather, Marcus MD, MAKISMD, Substack.com. You can get over and have a look at it yourself. Look at the actual video. It's quite a good video. Well done. Okay, well, hope you're having a good morning this morning. If you're driving or working, be careful out there. It's pretty wet and blustery and kind of dangerous out there on the roads. 9 minutes away from six. Let's just quickly have a look at the forecast. The temperatures remain the same, pretty much the same. I think Kaikohe is still the highest. Yes, they reckon it's 29.1 degrees in Kaikohe. I don't believe it. I think they've got a problem with their thermometer. Lumsden, it's cooled off a wee bit there, 5.5 degrees. The windiest place is now Christchurch in the Port Hills, 51 kilometres. And Rotorua is starting to get a bit of that storm now up in Rotorua, 3.4 millimetres of rain. Temperatures across New Zealand, Stewart Island 7 degrees, Invercargill's on 8, Dunedin is 9 along with Timaru, Chatham Island 16, Christchurch 10, Blenheim's on 17. Back down to Christchurch, quite cool there this morning, 7 degrees, Franz Josef warmed up 16, Westport 17, Nelson's on 18. At the bottom of the North Island of New Zealand, Wellington 20 degrees, Masterton a little bit cooler 16, Palmerston North 20, New Plymouth 19, Taupo and Rotorua 17 and 18 degrees, Gisborne's 20 degrees along with Tauranga and Hamilton, Auckland 19, Whangarei 18 and Kaitaia 27. But somehow Kaikohe has 29.1 degrees. Unbelievable, isn't it? The short forecast, significant heavy rain and strong winds for much of New Zealand today. For Northland to Taranaki, including Coromandel, Bay of Plenty, Taupo and Taumarunui, rain with occasional downpours and possible heavy thunderstorms, or heavy downpours with thunderstorms, easing to a few showers this afternoon and evening. For Gisborne, Hawke's Bay and the Tararua District, cloudy with scattered rain, possibly heavy this evening. For Whanganui to Taihape, also Wellington and the Wairarapa, periods of rain today. For Marlborough, Nelson, Buller and Westland, heavy rain at times, easing in Westland this morning. For Canterbury, periods of rain, easing during the afternoon and evening. For Otago, Southland and Fiordland, rain with snow down to 700 metres at first, then rain easing this morning and then clearing in the afternoon. And the Chathams, cloudy periods. We'll pop over to the newspapers and see what's happening there.
88.1 FM, The Wireless, New Zealand News.
Right, we'll go to the Otago Daily Times first of all and see what's happening there. We've got this morning a related ED presentation, double over 10 years. Now, the numbers of patients with alcohol-related injuries visiting one of New Zealand's busiest hospital emergency departments more than doubled over the past decade, but it's not what you think. The young people aren't drinking as much. It's the older chaps that are, the old people that are coming in. People like you, Digger.
No, not like me. I don't drink much. I don't drink at all. I've got more of a smoking problem.
Yeah, you sure have. Here it is. You're like a dog.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't mean that in a bad way. You know when you're going by a new dog and you say, well, the dog's not allowed inside, and the next thing, after about a week, you know, things looking at you, and might be even just after a few hours, and then the dog's allowed inside, but he's not allowed to come into the living, not allowed on the carpet. And then, you know, another hour or two passes or whatever, and then next thing he's on the carpet. Well, he's not allowed upstairs in the bedrooms. And then so he's, you know, then the next thing you know, he's in the bedrooms. Well, he's certainly not allowed in my room. And then after a few more days, he's in your bed. And you're like that with the cigarettes. You know, here's me saying go outside and smoke. Now you're smoking inside. And now you're sitting at the same sound desk as me. You're not sharing the microphone, thank goodness, with that breath. But here I am allowing you to smoke cigarettes in front of me at 5 to 6 in the morning on a Friday morning. Yeah, 5 to 6. Now, the number of patients with alcohol-related injuries visiting one of New Zealand's busiest hospital emergency departments has more than doubled over the past decade. And a new University of Otago Christchurch study has found those presenting to ED with alcohol harm are predominantly older New Zealanders rather than youths. lead researcher, Christchurch Hospital emergency physician and Otago of University of Otago senior lecturer, Dr. Laura Joyce. She said the ED study published in today's New Zealand Medical Journal provided a detailed three-week snapshot of alcohol-related patient presentations to the Christchurch Hospital emergency department in 2013, 2017 and 2022. Overall, the study found no let-up in the number of alcohol-related presentations emergency staff were treating over time. But she said that excess of alcohol as a reason for presentation to the Christchurch ED in our study rose from just 5% in 2013 to 11% in 2022. That was right in the middle of the pandemic, wasn't it?
Yeah, so people getting pissed. Because, you know, government got them all stressed out with the daily puppet show.
They did. She said alcohol harm is pervasive across New Zealand, leading to significant injury and chronic diseases causing more than 5% of all premature deaths. That's what they say. Whether that's true or not, we don't know. Probably wouldn't help the old... I think you're too much of anything is bad. The Apostle Paul said moderation in all things. The Bible doesn't condemn alcohol. It condemns drunkenness. It doesn't say there's anything to, you know, doesn't talk about alcoholism. You know, we're trying to turn just people that can't control themselves, and like you, Digger, who'd smoke, and they're trying to, you know, say you've got some disease, addicted to nicotine. You could stop if you wanted to, couldn't you?
Yeah, of course. No sweat. When I ran out of money.
That's right. The people presenting to the ED were approached and consented to take part in the study if they ingested alcohol in the 4 hours prior to presenting, or if their presentation was thought to be alcohol-related. Dr. Joyce, she said that overall 412 patients consented to take part. Over the three waves, the median age of participants increased to 39 years. Specifically, in the 25 to 54 age group, alcohol presentations rose from 29.9 in 2013 to 40.1 in 2022. And in the overall age was 54 age group was up from it went from 11.6% in 13 to 23.9% in 22. So the old chaps were obviously really using alcohol as a bit of a crutch during the pandemic. In 2013, young people aged 25 and under made up 33.6% of presentations, and that dropped to 19.3% in 2022, so they weren't sort of as sucked in as we were. Although media attention often focused on young people drinking in pubs and bars on Saturday night, this is not the case in terms of ED presentations in this study, Dr. Joyce said. She said our findings are in line with the other research showing that over one-third of older New Zealanders are drinking at levels which may result in harm. She said this is concerning, as people in this age group are more likely to have additional comorbidities. That's a word we didn't know even existed until COVID pandemic. Is that right?
Yes, that's right, pandemic. Get that straight.
And, you know, the COVID morbidities and potential for medication interactions. A significant proportion of patients admitted to consuming 20 or more standard drinks in a single occasion, while showing binge drinking was still prevalent in New Zealand. Two-thirds of the patients in the study had consumed alcohol in private locations, such as their homes. She said, "We feel this highlights the need for stronger local alcohol policies."
Oh, rubbish. It's none of your business
what people do. You know, unless they're committing crimes or beating up the wife. Or the other way around. There's a bit of that goes on too, isn't it?
Yes, there are some wild women out there.
I know. Anyway, so this is so what she wants to see is alcohol policies for off-licence venues, particularly seeing that they are a key supplier of large quantities of cheap alcohol and methylated spirits. And it reminds me of Dave Allen when he said, the winos will go into the chemist shop and ask for a bottle of methylated spirits. And then they give him one and go,
oh, haven't you got a cold one?
Oh, I did your voice, Digger.
Yeah, I know. You're getting good at it.
Oh, I know. I am. With the recent passing of the Sale Supply of Alcohol Community Participation Amendment Bill, councils can now implement strong controls on alcohol availability without the risk of alcohol industry appeals, particularly from alcohol retailers. It was important that EDs in New Zealand systematically collect alcohol-related data to help inform effective population-level alcohol policies to reduce excessive drinking, according to Dr. Joyce, who wants to control what people do. We've got another fake infection in this rare parasite. Second dog, apparently, in Christchurch has been infected with the Babesioni. A biosecurity investigation has found the teens. I don't think we were very generous yesterday, thinking that that was just a couple of young blokes on the off-roading in Nelson, you know, racing or something like that. I don't think that was the case in this. So our apologies for saying that. So we unreservedly apologise. At 6 o'clock, teens killed in the off-road crash near Nelson. They've been named, and they are two lovely young girls, only 18. They were Joanna Lewis Beach and Bondi Rehanna Richmond. They were both 18 of Waikawa in Marlborough. The sounds there. And police they received an autonomous crash alert from a mobile phone device at about 11 o'clock on Monday. That was from them, pinpointing the location near the BB's Knob. It was a driving track off the Top House Road. Now, a helicopter was used in the initial search alongside officers on foot and a police dog, while a vehicle with two teenagers inside was located down a steep bank. So they went off the road. That happened. My sister went off the road going home, just slid off the road and down the bank. She was just lucky. She's lucky the car rolled over. And the fire and emergency that arrived, they said, "You're lucky to be alive." She was pretty smashed up. She had to go and buy a new car. My little sister Leanne. A search and rescue operation was then launched involving Landsar volunteers to recover their bodies. A serious crash unit has been advised and the deaths have been referred to the coroner. So that's very sad. But there's one good thing out of this, and that comes from the Bible. And it comes from a teaching that John McClone in Kentucky taught me about a couple of years ago now, the age of understanding. God is very gracious. And the children of Israel, he pointed me to a couple of verses in the Bible, in the Old Testament. And the children of Israel, they weren't allowed to go into the promised land if they were over 20. I think it's 20 or 21, it might be 21, because of their unbelief. So if these two girls weren't Christians, even though they're not Christians and they're unbelievers, they're still with our Creator, the Lord Jesus Christ. They're with him now, because the Bible says absent from the body, present with the Lord. But if you're an adult, and these kids aren't adults, they're teenagers, and so they're under 20. And I believe that's a picture for us to follow. So a lot of kids get killed in accidents, you know, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds. We had those five kids that were killed down in the South Island there. One of them was in the boot of the car. They were speeding along. They all got killed. And so they go straight to heaven because they, even though they're just not adult enough to know, you know, to think things through. But when you get to about 20, I think that's the age. You've got to make sure that you get your Bible verses right and make sure you know where you're going when you die. Everyone gets an opportunity. No one, God is just. Everyone gets an opportunity to become a Christian. And if you don't, I believe God gives you an opportunity. You know, there'll be people out there in the darkest depths of the bush somewhere, you know, some foreign country, some island somewhere in the Indian Ocean. They've never heard the gospel. Well, God's not going to send them to hell, is he? Without an opportunity. And that's what I believe. These young girls, they'll be with the Lord right now. And we know that too, because when Jesus was there, he had little children were rallying around him, you know, talking to him, listening to him. Kids were really attracted to him. And the apostles thought, oh, they're bothering him. And he said, no, leave them. Suffer little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of God. So those little kids belong to God. Isn't that great? Fantastic, eh? Nice to know that. It's present tense, for such is the kingdom of God. So kids belong to God. When the rapture happens, all the kids and all the kids under 20 are going to head to heaven in the rapture. You'll find that in, where is it? Digger? Thessalonians 4, that's right. And 1 Corinthians 15, that's right. You'll find the rapture there. In fact, that's Handel's Messiah. That's part of the wording for Handel's Messiah, is 1 Corinthians chapter 15. But I don't think people realise that. All right, let's move on with some news. And we have better play some music this morning too. You've got one for me?
Yeah, I have, but I won't play it yet.
All right. Now, lifting rapist's name suppression would ignite a firestorm, according to his lawyer. The lawyer for a convicted rapist has appealed a decision to make his name public, arguing an insidious social media firestorm would reignite what happened. And he's down in Wellington, and he's pretty well known, and he's a foreigner, but very well known. And but I don't think it would. I think the fact that he was allowed out on bail before his trial, I think that was what pissed people off. Someone broke into his house and used a spray can to write rapist on the walls. You know, you can understand that, can't you? Because they probably feel he should have been incarcerated and held until his trial, because he's obviously guilty. So that's him. Dame Sophie Pascoe, she welcomes her first baby. Isn't that wonderful? Paralympic swimming champion Dame Sylvia Pascoe has announced the birth of her first child. They're not saying whether it's a boy or a girl, but they've got a lovely photograph there of the mum and dad's hands and little baby hands and hand between them. Chief Ombudsman, good news for him. He's been asked to stay on despite his age. The Chief Ombudsman, Peter Boshier, he's been asked to continue in his role despite the law saying that he must resign. But there's a clause in that law, I think it's 72, there's a clause in that law that says that if they can't find a replacement, then he can stay on. And that's what they've done. Now, a man, this Indian from Fiji, he stole intimate photos and blackmailed the victims. He is an absolute ratbag going back a long, long time. So he's in prison now. He's a serial scammer. He hacked a student's social media account. He stole intimate photos and videos and then posted them to the student's Instagram account and sent them to his family. I tell you what, he is a real bad bugger and he needs to go back to Fiji. Apparently the judge says he's going to serve half of his term. I think he's in there for, I don't know if it's, I think it's 3 or 4 years. So he'll serve half of that and then he'll be out. His name is Krishneel Nathan Maharaj. He blackmailed the victim to pay him $2,500, but never received the money. And he didn't stop there, though. The 33-year-old went on to torment a student in other ways, causing him huge distress and over a prolonged period. The student was Maharaj's only, he wasn't his only victim, though. He also threatened to leak another woman's nude photos if she did not provide him with sexual favours. This is incredible, and you can't blame this woman. He created a fake a Fijian passports in other people's names that he'd stolen from them. The Fijian national also had been jailed for 1 year and 10 months, and Judge Jane Farish, she said that it would likely be he'd be deported and after he'd served one-third of a sentence, so he's not going to be here for long. On Wednesday, he appeared in the Christchurch District Court for sentencing on charges of blackmail, theft, obtaining by deception, altering a document with intent to defraud, using a document for pecuniary advantage, unlawfully taking a motor vehicle, causing loss by deception, and possession of a meth pipe. So he's got a bit of a pee problem. He was also convicted on forgery and using forged documents after he created fake passports from people known to him from the Fiji community, including a family member whom he'd stolen from. Maharaja's trail of deceit began in 2019, in May, when he contacted a person on TradeMe he was selling their car, expressing his interest in purchasing it. He went to the man's house and showed him a screenshot of a fake bank transfer indicating the money had been paid for the vehicle. Believing the transaction was complete, the man gave Maharaj the car and he drove it to Auckland, where he handed it over to an associate. Maharaj repeated the act with a different victim who was selling a $1,600 television before their family was going through financial hardship. Not before, but their family was going through hardship, so I thought we'd better sell that off. And then they didn't get the money. Later, Maharaj was at the Auckland Sky City doing a bit of gambling on August 27th, 2022, when he stole a cell phone that he'd found sitting next to a gaming machine. When the partner of the man who owned the $1,200 iPhone called it, Maharaj answered and agreed to give it back. But the following day, Maharaj phoned the woman through a messenger app installed on her partner's phone and threatened her. He said, "You can't find me, but I can find you." And that he would only give the phone back if she provided sexual favours to him. What a bloomin', just a scumbag. Maharaj then threatened to distribute the intimate photos and videos of her and her partner that he had found on the phone and confirmed that he knew her address and that he would go to her house and force her into sexual acts. The next day, Maharaj sent a message to the woman saying that he looked, or she looked hot in the photos, and that he would back up everything from the phone to his device and then give it back. But first, he wanted to see her in person, the same way as she was in the photos. He described himself as a hacker. He said he would post the woman's photos and make her famous. The couple went to the police, and later spoken to by the officer, Maharaj claimed that he was doing a good thing by keeping the phone safe and trying to return it. About 3 months later, they should have locked him up then. About 3 months later, Maharaj hacked a student's email account and used it to access his personal data, his business and Instagram accounts. That led to him discovering intimate photos and videos of the student, his girlfriend, and they were who were known to him. They had been saved on to their messages to one another. And Maharaj threatened to post the visuals to the student's Instagram account and if he didn't give him $2,500. $2,500. When the money wasn't paid, Maharaj went through with his threat and not only posted them to the victim's Instagram account, but he also sent them to his contacts. Maharaj continued to torment the student by enacting a plan to give his father's car, get his father's car towed and scrapped for parts. Just unbelievable. Just a rotten human being. While the father was able to recover his car before it was scrapped, he had to spend more than $3,000 to have it repaired and released to him. Between November 2022 and January 2023, while assessing the student's email account and personal details, Maharaj obtained the ANZ bank card in his name and he stole $1,041 from him. He also accessed the student's university login and requested a new identification card, altering the details online to display Maharaj's picture. However, the card was delivered to the student's home address rather than Maharaj's. Finally, in May 2023, Maharaj and an associate produced fake Fijian passports. I hope they catch up with that associate or associates and send them all back to Fiji, typically with their photos, the details of people known to them. Other passports were made with made-up identities. They used the passports to gain or attempt to gain property or services such as phones and a tenancy lease. Maharaj used the family members' details to steal $2,000 from them, acquired a phone and two SIM cards valued at $2,198 using the name of someone else known to him, and he also withdrew $1,500 from that person's bank account. When police searched Maharaj's house, they found a laptop with partially completed fake passports and methamphetamine pipes. In sentencing, his victims sought reparation for the financial costs they incurred, but Maharaj was unable to pay them. His lawyer, Matt Smith, he acknowledged his client's offending was prolonged, but told the judge it was out of character. Doesn't sound like it. As Maharaj had struggled with the loss of his stepfather and turned to meth. Judge Farish said blackmail was one of the most insidious of our crimes. Acknowledging the significant distress Maharaj's offending had caused his victims, you nearly destroyed their lives. These people who had done you no harm. She refused to give Maharaj full credit for his guilty pleas, stating it would be just wrong, as he initially denied the offending and was on the run for some time before police finally caught up to him. Emily Morehouse, Open Justice journalist, put that story together. Very well done, Emily. The Otago Daily Times, what a scumbag. Just ship him straight back, man. Give him hard labour too while they're here. None of this sitting in jail business. Another news for the Otago Daily Times, a woman, she's been awarded $1,345 a week from her ex 2 years after they split. The woman who claimed she was defamed by her former partner's vicious rumours fought him for spousal maintenance of $1,345 a week. More than 2 years after they split up. A Brazilian pair allegedly stole $20,000 worth of Lego. Wonder why they do that. A pair of brazen Lego thieves set fire alarms off in the store as a diversion before legging it with their bits and pieces on foot. The fate of Shortland Street could be unknown amid the TVNZ cuts. The future of the New Zealand's beloved long-running... I don't think I'd recognise anybody if I went... Well, I haven't seen it. That since probably 1990s, last time I saw Shortland Street, the future, and that was only because my wife was in television, and you know, everyone will go to the go to the big end of year celebrations and stuff like that. Anyway, so the future of this beloved, apparently long running drama, Short and Sweet, is unknown. Museum, they bring back the iconic Powershell House. Fred and Myrtle's Powershell House is back as a virtual tour. And, we've got that Warner Brothers Discovery, bit of a struggle there. Gosh, I hope we're going out on the radio, all right? Just stop for a minute and just make sure that the microphone looks like it's working. Okay. Radical solution was offered to save part of News Hub, apparently. Warner Brothers Discovery will struggle to retain viewers if it has no operation, according to Paddy Gower. He's really pissed off. He predicts it as he continues his crusade for someone to save at least part of the television newsroom. And people are saying, oh, go woke, go broke. And he's going, get stuffed, isn't he? A house at risk from the scrub fire in Auckland. Fire crews were working to protect a house from the risk of the scrub fire that has closed part of the Kaipara Coast Highway. We're getting into old news now. That was yesterday. They've actually arrested someone there who's suspected of lighting that fire. We'll move over to the post now, and it looks like Fox Glacier down on the west coast of the South Island, that was cut off, part of that was cut off, and the excavations, they urged, excavators, I can see one working anyway, trying to clear the road. Blenheim, as wild weather sweeps the country, I think it's going to ease off today for them. They say here, torrential rain across New Zealand has left Fox Glacier inaccessible and concerns that the Wairau River north of Blenheim could flood, but it hasn't. So that's good. The high winds, though, and they're up in the north now at the moment, and that's going to continue. It was pretty wild overnight, apparently, up in the north. They've got winds there, just looking at the marine forecast. So what have we got for the situation? I'll just tell you. There's a front that's crossing New Zealand today, and there's a low that lies slow moving to the west of the South Island. Now, the low crosses the country and it weakens on Saturday, and it's making its way for a ridge in the Tasman Sea to move eastwards. The ridge affects the whole country on Sunday, well, that's good, and later on Monday. Another front approaches from the South Island, from the Tasman Sea. The Bay of Islands at the moment, they've got 35 knots. And it's gusting 50 knots from the northeast. So it'll be some pretty big swell there, I would think. Today, 50, easing. It's going to ease, though, to northwest is 15 knots mid-morning. So it's all, I think it might actually be happening already up there in the far north, turning westerly 15 knots late in the afternoon and then easing to 10 knots. There you go. So tomorrow it's just going to be westerly 15 knots. Fine tomorrow up in the far north. Looking at Hawke's Bay, it looks as though it's going to ease off as well. The northwesterly, easterlies at 20 knots at the moment, gusting 30. And then tomorrow it's going to drop down to 15 knots from the northwest, becoming southwest 10 knots. Then it's going to fine up, just a 1 metre swell there. Wellington, they've got strong winds today, northerly 25 knots, gusting 35 knots, but it's going to ease to 15 knots mid-morning. And then tomorrow it's going to be southerlies 15 knots, and it's going to rise to 20 knots, though, for a little while there about the south coast in the evening. There'll be some rain, unfortunately, for you. You've had enough rain, I think. Christchurch, you've got pretty windy today, 25 knots, gusting 35 knots today. Strong wind advisory is in force. It's going to ease to 15 knots about by the afternoon and 10 knots in the evening, and seas will be rough for a while there. Tomorrow it's going to be southwesters 15 knots, becoming westerly 10 knots with occasional rain clearing later. So not too bad. Too bad, eh? Any other news? Should we have a look at world news? It doesn't seem to be too much world news. There's not much news happening today for a Friday. Oh, here we go. We've just got a new update from Radio New Zealand's just come through. Rivers rise, some told to evacuate. Oh, some Marlborough households are being asked to evacuate as heavy rain and strong winds move in. We better click on that, hadn't we? Better have a look at that. Just come through 5 minutes ago. Previous storms have weakened the Peninsula Road stop bank, and the Marlborough Civil Defence is asking 70 households in Spring Creek to... Now, I think that Spring Creek was where my great-grandfather was gold mining there. He's a very wealthy builder, actually. He built the Majestic Theatre in Wellington. And my great-grandfather, was it my great-great-great? Oh, that was on my grandmother's side. Yeah, Humphreys. So, and his brother convinced him to go, it was either Deep Creek or Spring Creek, might have been Deep Creek, to invest in the gold mining. And it was actually a very lucrative mine, but he couldn't find any. And so he, all the money that he'd made, the flipping, you know, lots and lots, he was very wealthy. My grandmother had, they had servants. I've got photographs of them outside this big three-storied home with all these servants and flipping horses and carts and things everywhere. Look very flash, all lovely bridles and gigs and whatever. Motorbikes and stuff like that as well. Oh, no, not a motorbike. That was my granddad. He had an Indian, 1919, I think it was, 1919 Indian. No, this is my great-grandfather on my grandmother's side. And anyway, so he lost all his money. He died as a drunk in the end, in remorse. My dad said he just died in remorse. But he built my grandmother and my grandfather a beautiful home with a lovely, it was gorgeous. It had what do they call those things that go around the bottom of the house? It was sort of a stone around the bottom, looked really nice, came up quite a way, actually, and then it was lovely weatherboards, I think it was. But it was beautifully, beautifully designed and beautifully built. And as I said, he built the Majestic Theatre. I'm not sure whether the Majestic Theatre is still up and running or whether it's being pulled down and rebuilt or whatever. I'm not sure. I'll have to actually find out about that. And my great-grandfather on my dad's side, he built Miranda Harcourt, actually. I think she owned that building for a while. It's the Edwards Building. He built that in 1909, I think it was, had that built. It was a four-story building. They called it the Edwards White Elephant because it was partially over on the, I think it was about 3 inches on the neighbouring property there in Manus Street. So that's the Edwards Building there. You can see that up there, I think Edwards Building, 1870-something rather, 1880 or something, would have been 1880. But it was built in 1901. I think Crichton was the architect, and so you can see that building. It's a lovely building. My brother and I wanted to buy it there. We were going to buy it, actually, but Miranda Harcourt, they've strata titled it, I think, and they're all individual titles now. So that's them. So we was rich in those days, and now we're as poor as church mice. Oh, well, we're comfortable. Anyway, getting back to the story about the weather moves up the country today, and there's going to be severe thunderstorm watches for Northland, Auckland, Great Barrier Island. I feel like we're in a bit of a reprieve in parts of the Auckland at the moment. It doesn't seem as bad as it was last night and early this morning. Coromandel Peninsula, they've got some warnings as well. Waikato and the Bay of Plenty. Radio New Zealand, what else did they say? National Emergency Agency, NEMA, they advise that at times of crisis or civil defence emergencies, a battery-powered radio or a car radio remain essential lifelines if power is out and other forms of communication are unavailable. And that's why we're going for the FM, you know, the higher power, medium power FM, because then we can be of service to people in our community, can't we? We can help. And it's a good thing. Sometimes it's nice to just to hear someone on the radio just talking, isn't it? And, I'd like to do talkback, actually. I'd like people to be able to give us a ring, you know, and, you know, say what's on their mind. There's not much of that going on, is there? You know, and then you do ring up and they don't, you know, if they don't agree with you, they cut you off instead of letting you have your say. During the pandemic, at the very beginning of the pandemic, we were all sort of like trying to ring up and say, look, hey, have you heard about this study here at, you know, La Jolla University in San Diego saying that natural immunity is better than blah, 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 and you just get cut off. That guy, Andrew Dickinson, or whatever his name, one of them there, don't know if it was him, some guy just cut us off. So we actually had, there was a team of us, and we ring up to try and get the message across to people that, hey, there's something weird going on here. Let's go back to One News and just see if they've got anything latest. Jack Tame, I think, that's what I meant to tell you. O.J. Simpson, he died of cancer, so he's obviously been well jabbed up. He's only 76, which is not old. So fate's finally caught up with O.J. Simpson earned fame, fortune, and adulation throughout this football and show business. But the legacy changed in June 1994, when apparently he slayed his ex-wife. Jack Tame, huge loss of journalism. Jobs harm us all. A huge loss of journalism jobs are going to harm us all. I don't think so, Jack. There's plenty of other people that are hopping into the breach to fill your disinformationist and you and your mates disinformation that you've given us over the last 6 years with the Ardern regime. Youth voices in local government are being silenced. Well, they don't know anything anyway. News reports that the Wanganui Youth Council is on the chopping block, and it's not the only one. Also, yeah, we talked about the alcohol-related death, didn't we? And big bureaucracy. Rising council staff numbers have been called out. When it comes to West Coast Regional Council, they've adopted a policy of returning to in-house. That's the core functions, in-house. But that's a wee bit interesting. Also, some people were stranded, some fishermen were stranded on an island in the, where was that? Not far from Fiji. Anyway, they were stranded and they used palm leaves to write the word on the beach, help, and they were rescued. Big bureaucracy here on the West Coast. The matter came up on April the 9th when former chairman Alan Birchfield, he queried a statement by his replacement, Peter Haddock, which said it was good council management staff were almost back into full muster following recent appointments. Now, it comes after council adopted a policy of returning in-house its core functions via direct employment, which it should be anyway. It shouldn't be sent out to consultants. And they were cutting back on external contractors. Well, that's good. They did that. However, Birchfield, this is the outgoing guy, he expressed concerns over the recruitment of more staff. What's the total number? This is what he asked. What's the total number of people that will be employed by the West Coast Regional Council? The chief executive, Darryl Liu, said that he would need to come back with a clear answer. You should know straight away. However, the council has been advised staffing requirement, which encompassed the full-time equivalent baseline of employment. Hang on, I'll read that again. However, council now had a revised staffing requirement which encompassed the full-time equivalent baseline of employment. Birchfield persisted. How many people? Oh, roughly 70, said Liu. Birchfield said, my figures say 80. Birchfield replied, well, it's in the high 70s. He said, that's a lying sod. Birchfield said that the increase in staff was a concern when the sustainability of the region having four councils was only 32,000 people. Four councils with only 32,000 people, and he reckons it's questionable. He said that we're getting to be quite a bureaucracy for the people on the West Coast to have to carry. I just can't see how that people on the West Coast can carry the four councils. Now, Councillor Peter Ewan said that staffing increases would be put in perspective, they should be put in perspective, as it was positive. He was positive the number of consultants had reduced. Yeah, but that's not good enough. Ewan said that he agreed that the region should only have one local government entity eventually. The cost advantage would include having only to administer one payroll and shoulder the pay of one chief executive instead of four. Quadruple cost of the current setup was unsustainable. This is what Ewan said. There is no need for that. Haddock reminded council staff increase that it reflects its previous decision. The council decided to bring a lot of staff back in-house rather than using consultants, as has the past been the huge cost to ratepayers. Bringing back the in-house engineering team was a prime example of this. Birchfield said that he was reflecting community concern about its economic viability. I'm getting a lot of feedback from people that can't afford their rates. Council rates are becoming unaffordable and there needs to be a move to one council. I just don't think the West Coast can continue the way it's going. The game is over, guys. Internally, council pared down its senior management team from 7 to 5 and changed staff to management reporting lines. And Mr. Liu said that he was very pleased with the good quality of back and blah, blah, blah. But it looks as though they've actually got more people now, or as many as they ever had before. They've just got rid of the contractors and made it look like they're doing their bit for the government. So this seems to be happening all these councils. I think this is what Grant Edwards thinks at 6:30 on a Friday morning. He thinks there needs to be a total audit of all councils by an independent inquiry. Almost needs to be a select committee inquiry or something like that. Is that what they call it? I think it's something like that. And they need to go through the books and cut out all the deadwood. And I'm sure there's black ops. They're funneling money into other things, World Economic Forum things and United Nations stuff. And the smart cities, which turn out to be what, Digger?
They turn out to be dumb ghettos.
That's right. That's right. If you look at China, they're just dumb ghettos. Okay, what else have we got in the news? It's a very slow news morning today. We've only just got just report. It's really only the weather, the only thing that's happening. Oh, there's been a bit of a school has boosted their attendance And I don't know, it's a bit silly, really, because, you know, in Horahora, up in the far north up there, the school, they've created a service which has increased the attendance, and all they've done is just put on some buses. The school's gone and bought some buses, and they want us to pay for it. The school in the region with New Zealand's worst truancy rates says it has created a service which has boosted attendance without costing the government. The Horahora school has stepped in to help family who struggle with transport by providing a pick-up and drop-off van service. Well, isn't that what you do normally? I mean, we used to have a van if it was only a few kids, or it would be the school bus in rural places. And Horahora is pretty rural. Before, it was around 1%. She said it's helped me a lot because she doesn't have a car. Horahora School Principal Pat Newman said that for some children, no van would mean that they wouldn't be in attendance. Well, there's always correspondence school. Truancy was a big problem in Northland, with the worst rates of attendance in the country. But in the last 2 years, Horahora School has improved its attendance rates by targeting family members, not the school, by going to pick them up and drop them off. Well, we used to get kids when I was young. My cousins, for Sunday school, they would go and drive around and pick up all the kids. My cousins and us, we'd pick up all the kids in the old Mark III Zephyr or whatever. You know, everyone. That's what the elders would do in the church. So I think Murray was, what was he, about 23, 24, and that was his job on a Sunday morning to go around and pick up. And I think my auntie Anne, she was picking up kids and taking them, bringing them to Sunday school. So if you want kids to attend your school, you've got to go and pick them up and drop them off if they haven't got cars or the parents are a bit, you know, like we've got up in Northland there. Newman said the cost of getting these kids to school with the van would add up to about $50,000 per year. The school purchased two vans and hired the drivers, and these are students who, for no fault of their own, well, it's the parents' fault, isn't it? They can't afford to send them to even get them to school. I mean, surely you could have a ride share or something like that, but they're trying to get rid of truancy, and what they're trying to do is like have rolls and stuff like that. You know, well, didn't we normally have rolls? My parents would be called we'd have an attendance roll every morning. Apparently, they're not doing this anymore. They'd call you out, Grant, Edward, I'm going to be present, miss, you know. You know, Digger Davidson, present, sir. And if you were, and then you check, oh, look, we've got three missing on the roll. They go straight to the head office and, the main office there, and the lady there would ring your parents to find out where you were. They had the emergency number, they had the work number, had home number. Where's Grant today? Oh, he's gone for a bike ride up the Tararuas. Or he's gone somewhere else where he shouldn't be. But that we did that anyway. It seems as though, are these teachers so overworked they can't even have a roll call every morning? It was a roll call every morning in the class. And we had assembly. Do you have assembly still where we all stand there? We used to had to stand up, take our caps off, and sing God Save the Queen and the National Anthem. We didn't sing it in Māori either. We sang just about the whole thing with all the wonderful lyrics about honouring God, which they've taken out. It's hard to find online, hard to find the full national anthem. It's all, I think they just added the Maori language in there so that they could take out, because no one understands it, so they could take out all the wonderful, wonderful words, the lyrics of honouring our Creator and what a wonderful country that we live in, that He's given us. God's own, we used to call it. And now it's becoming, you know, a flippin' poop hole in the South Pacific in some areas because of mass immigration. We can't sustain it. We've got too many people who came here last year. 173,000 new immigrants came to New Zealand, the highest on record. And we don't have the facilities. We don't have the hospital facilities. We don't have the roading. And that's why people are moving out of Auckland, because they just can't even get to work. It takes them an hour to get to work. That's unacceptable. 2 hours driving every day just to go and have a job. No wonder people just stay at home on the dole and smoke pee. Don't smoke pee, you'll be in trouble. Now, there was someone that, there was a lady that, a terrible incident. I will just tell you quickly about the help sign that leads the US Pacific Rescue Mission to these castaways. Now, a group of three mariners, they were stranded on a Micronesian island, and they were found. I'll just quickly tell you a wee bit about that one there. The mission was sparked after the trio used palm fronds to spell out help on the shore of the Micronesian island. It was named Pikelot Atoll. Surprisingly, the ordeal turned into a reunion for some family members because the people that were one of the fellows on board the U.S. Coast Guard ship was actually one of his family members. But the islanders used got a well because it's and it's got coconuts, so they survived on coconuts and water and a bit of a shelter there on the beach that, you know, I could see some corrugated iron, so it looks as though it's a bit used by fishermen anyway to come in and have a bit of a reprieve. Anyway, so that's it. So they were found safe and sound. And also, New South Wales Australian doctor. New South Wales, they've banned five-year-olds. Oh, no, it's nothing. Australian doctor, he fights a suspension over his wife's cocaine death. Respiratory and sleep physician Peter Spencer, he cut open Miyumi Spencer's throat in an attempt to resuscitate her. Now, it sounds terrible, but what he did it's called a cricothyroidotomy, and that's when they'll they cut your throat. If you can't breathe, some reason, you've swallowed your tongue or something, I don't know the reason why, but he did that. But he still didn't phone. He didn't phone emergency service. You'd think he would have phoned them straight away, but he said, he got a bit annoyed in the court and said, I was trying to resuscitate my wife. She ended up dying. So they did this cricothyroidotomy, and you cut where the windpipe is, and then you poke a straw or, you know, break a pen open and poke that in so that the patient can breathe. So that's what he did. But anyway, so they're not, the courts aren't that happy with him. He's a respiratory and sleep physician, Peter Spencer. He's appealing the Medical Board of Australia's suspension of his medical registration after a coroner recommended him for negligent homicide charges over his wife's death. Happened a while ago. He represented himself at a virtual Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal hearing yesterday. And when he appeared, he was visibly irritated that he had to be muted due to his constant interruptions. Miyumi Spencer, who was 29, she died in their Melbourne apartment of cocaine toxicity after a night out on the town with him in January 2015. That's what the coroner had found. Robert tried to resuscitate her at about 4 a.m. after she started vomiting and had a fit, and then attempted to perform a cricothyroidotomy using the kitchen knife and a pen. Now, this involves making an incision to unblock the person's airways, as I said, but the procedure was unsuccessful. So in June 2023, Victorian coroner John Kane, he found Robert had waited 3.5 hours to call for an ambulance despite his wife's inability to breathe. Paramedics arrived to find Miyumi lying on the floor of their lounge room, but as Robert, he was there performing CPR, using pretty gentle compressions, the coroner was told. So it sounds like he's basically killed her. Now, talking about killing, and we'll have a song for them coming up by JJ Cowell in a moment. Now, a US mum, a woman fatally stabbed her partner at her Los Angeles apartment and then threw her two children from a moving SUV. It was a one of those Porsche Cayennes, onto the freeway. Killed the infant, that's the daughter, and the other one seemed to survive. Is alive, thank goodness. She calls herself, she's an astrologer, and so she's involved with the devils. If you're an astrologer doing all that sort of stuff, you know, mediums and all that sort of that rubbish, then you are into devilish stuff, and you open yourself up to demonic possession. She called the impending solar eclipse an epitome of spiritual warfare in online posts. That was earlier in the day. Her name is Danielle Chiriaka Johnson. She's 34. She posted on X. She's an astronomer, influencer, and a recording artist with the moniker Ayoka in the days leading up to the violence, which began hours before the eclipse peaked in Southern California, according to Lieutenant Guy Golan of the Los Angeles Police. Now, while detectives have reviewed her post, police were not considering the eclipse to be a precipitating or contributing factor in the slayings because we just don't know why she did what she did, Golan told the Associated Press yesterday. We've taken all the facts we can but without being able to interview her and without having something more tangible than a post on X, I don't know how much weight you can give somebody saying there's an apocalypse. How you can, you know, attribute that to one of the most horrific murders that we've seen in LA in a long time. Authorities said that Johnson and her partner, who is 29, Jalen Allen Chaney, had an argument at around 20 to 4 in the morning in their apartment at Woodlands Hills, which is quite a snazzy area, about 42 kilometres northwest of downtown LA. Johnson stabbed Chaney and fled with their kids, an 8-month-old girl and a 9-year-old little old sister, in a Porsche Cayenne. Johnson then drove along State Interstate 405 in Culver City and then threw her daughters out of the moving SUV at around 4:30 in the morning. Police said the baby was pronounced dead on the road, but the older daughter, who witnessed the stabbing, survived with moderate injuries. She travelled southwest on Rodeo Redondo Beach, where half an hour later she was driving at over 160 kilometres per hour and she crashed into a tree. That'll be the end of it. You crash into a tree, they don't move. The LAPD was investigating whether the solo crash was an apparent suicide, probably. The Los Angeles Times, they first reported on Johnson's social media activities in connection with her killings. She says, this is what she said, get your protection on and your heart in the right place. She posted on April 4th. To more than 105,000 followers on X. The world is very obviously changing right now. And if you need, if you ever needed to pick a side, now's the time to do the right thing. And then just going on like that. And then she did all caps. Wake up, wake up. This is on the 5th of April. Wake up, the apocalypse is here. Everyone has ears, listen. She's just a nutcase. That's why we don't listen to women. Do we dig it? No, don't listen to women. The Bible even says the women have got to be silent in the church. And if you want to know anything, go and ask your husband at home. Be quiet. Because when they start yapping, the men shut up and say nothing. And that's, God knows that. And that's why they're told to shut up. Not allowed to talk. Be quiet. Do what you're told. So that's why, and you know, that's why you need a Bible too. You go listening to half-wits like this, you know, they're flip-flopping crackpots. She had 105 other half-wits following her. Just an absolute nutcase. Anyway, that's her. So she's gone. Thank goodness the 9-year-old's okay. But as we said before, a little baby's absent from the body, present with the Lord. They're with the Lord right now. Now we'll move over to international news. China's Xi Jinping, he meets the former Taiwan leader on a pro-unification visit. China claims Taiwan as its own territory, to be annexed by force if necessary. Ooh. Cross-Canada runner Jonathan Nabbs, he sets his sights on New Zealand now, the 32-year-old capped crusader. He will be making some very special top stops between Bluff and Cape Reinga. He's on the way to do that. Hope he's doing it for a good cause. Media minister labelled out of her depth by the outgoing Labour guy, what's it, Willie Jackson, it'll be. Yeah, you halfwit, you didn't know what you were doing. Anyway, former Minister Willie Jackson called Melissa Lee bereft of any idea. Oh, just absolute rubbish. The Samoan bill. Yeah, remember we talked about that yesterday? Why National went one way and ACT went the other? It's the first time the government parties have ever been at odds on legislation. I don't know. There's not that many people who were involved in this. It's just some people from Samoa from 1920, they're born from 1920s, late 20s to 1940s, from late 40s. And they had their, during the Muldoon era in 1982, they had their citizenship taken away from them because we had a lot of problems with islanders in New Zealand, especially up in Auckland. A lot of them were, you know, going, getting pissed and violent. They were good workers during the day, but on the Friday night and Saturday night, they just wanted to go and look for a fight. And they were shockers. And the same, my friend was a taxi driver in Wellington. He says, same down there. They were just terrible. And that's why I thought, Muldoon was just looking for ways to get rid of them, deport them. So took away their citizenship and called them overstayers, and then they did the Dawn Raids, and they sent a whole lot of them packing back to the islands. And, you know, that helped lower the crime because they were flipping nasty. You know, you just look at them the wrong way. If they've had a few drinks in them, they would flipping bash you up for no apparent reason. And they were flipping tough. And so that's why that happened. But now they're calling for these. But they're all oldies now. They've calmed down. They're calling for them. But I don't know. That's going to bring other problems. That will mean if they get their citizenship restored, and ACT and ACT and New Zealand First, they voted in favour of it. But Nationals said no. They didn't vote in favour of it. And I think, you know, you can look at the big picture. That will mean all the hanger-oners, all the other, you know, then we'll have a whole lot more islanders coming here. And, man, when they get a few drinks in them, they get, you know, I'm just telling you what you're, I'm just saying what you're all thinking, eh? You know they're violent. You know that Maoris in this country cause all the crime, most of it. And you know that Asians are the worst drivers in Auckland. And we just say the things that you already, you are too scared to say, aren't you? We say it. Yeah. You got to catch us if you want to convict us. You got to find us first. You won't be able to find us. We've got a bunker, haven't we, Digger? Yeah, I've got a bunker. We've been working on that for a few years. Bomb shelter. Well, gosh, we talk some nonsense, don't we? Okay, Sky Tower, last night that was closed. They closed the restaurant, rather, as the wind lashed the city. The bad weather had forced the closure of a couple of restaurants there, but the Sky Tower were good. They arranged for other... for people that are booked for a night out at a restaurant there. They've got a couple of restaurants there quite high up, and they organised for them to have meals somewhere else. Shortland Street producers, they're in close conversations at the moment about the ongoing cost-cutting of the state broadcast. The TVNZ says that we need to look at everything across the entire slate. So five big things that happened yesterday. Changes detailed for rentals, heavy rain, we had issued for the north, and one food foraging mistake that you don't want to make, and that's going eating toadstools like the ex-wife did. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak, he apologises for wearing those Adidas Sambas. They were cool, he reckons, but he has apologised for it. I don't know why you would. Well, who cares what you're wearing on your feet? We've got a new program happening to try and attract some more Aussies over here. It's called New Ski Land, Tourism New Zealand's latest play for Australian tourist market. So what have they been up to? Well, last year, for the first time on record, more Australians visited Indonesia, 1.37 million. More than New Zealand, which was only 1.26 million. While holidays to Australia's northern neighbour are running at 98% of pre-pandemic levels, Trans-Tasman travel was yet to return to its full, it's only sitting at about 86% of where it was before the pandemic. Now, hence the new ski land. It's going to encourage Australians to hit the slopes and wander into less well-known regions. New Zealand becomes to life in the winter, Tourism New Zealand executive Andrew Waddell said. A lot of Australians don't know what else we do, and we want to showcase New Zealand as a winter playground. Alongside ski fields near Queenstown, Wanaka, Methven and Owakuni, that includes whale watching, you've got the Kaikouria in Kaikoura, mountain biking in Canterbury and hot pools scattered across the country. Tourism Minister Matt Ducci.
It's not Matt Ducci, it's Matt Ducey.
All right, Matt Ducey. Matt Ducey, he wasn't aware Indonesia had displaced New Zealand on top of the travel rankings. Said it was encouraging non-summer travel was a major focus, he said. It should be about smoothing out the peaks and the troughs, and it's better for operators maintaining their staff, and it's also a good use of their assets and resources across the 12 months, he told AAP. He said, you'll see it through Tourism New Zealand, ensuring that our offshore marketing campaigns are also focusing on shoulder and off-peak seasons. So New Zealand is struggling through a double-dip recession and eager for the return of the tourists, particularly from the Australian and the Chinese markets. It's running well behind the 2019 levels. Overall, New Zealand is receiving 82% of pre-pandemic tourists, helped by the boost of the Americans. They've been coming in. After the COVID pandemic, Americans decided they wanted to have New Zealand on their bucket list, according to Ducey. And the Chinese were a bit later in return than other countries after COVID, though we're starting to see less of the high-volume bus tour travellers from the Chinese and more to the high-value independent travellers. So in other words, they were coming in and spending on average of 9 days. Now they spend about 11 days. and they were spending sort of around about $434 a day, and that's what well, they are now, and that's come up a lot from $260 a day. So that's what they used to spend $260 a day, now it's doubled almost. And almost, well, 434, not quite double. And we also know that Australians are seeking more of their from their travel. They're prepared to put the money towards, but they want more of a deeper experience, richer immersion, demanding more from the experience, according to Waddell. So there we are. So that's what's going on there with the travel. And what else have we got happening in New Zealand? It's very quiet this morning, isn't it? Local news. Rates burden, local government's funding model is broken. Homeowners around the country are facing hefty rate rises due to the cost of living. It is, it's terrible, isn't it? Now, Cairns, he faces, oh, and I better not read that because I'm not sure if that's a place or someone they're talking about, because I don't really follow rugby, so I better not go there. Australian MP encouraged as the US considering dropping, what are they dropping? US President says he is considering Australia's request to drop the prosecution of WikiLeaks founder. Oh, that's good, isn't it? And then we heard about the 18-year-olds that were killed in an off-road accident. It was very sad, young girls, only 18. Gosh, I hate to be the parents right now. And then we've got this other story here over at the Post, I think it is. One News, naming rapist that would ignite a firestorm. We talked about that earlier. So it's got long-running Wellington rape case. So those in Wellington, you probably know who this person is anyway. He's a foreigner, apparently, but he's well-known. And so he was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months in prison, and his lawyer is fighting to keep his name suppressed. I don't think it should be. Second Christchurch dog apparently has tested positive for the fake parasite. Babiosia or something like that. A pair have been accused of stealing $20,000 worth of Lego from Auckland retailers. Go big or go home. The Taupo Resort with family at its heart. The family-run Lake Taupo holiday resort is big on being an all-year-round holiday destination. Oh, you can read that for yourself. Our Grammy Award-winning Chris Stapleton. We better find a song from Chris Stapleton. How about we do that instead of JJ Cale's making fun at a cocaine thing. He's decorated. Now, I don't know whether that means whether he's a war veteran decorated or whether he is. He's won a few Grammys. I think he's a pretty good singer. So we have a song from him coming up in a moment. He's going to be here in New Zealand. Chris Stapleton, he's big at the moment. Even in the pop circles, they love him. Chris Stapleton, he's announced a second show. He's so popular in Auckland next year. The US star has won 10 Grammys alongside 15 Country Music Association Awards and 10 Academy of Music Awards. So it's not just country. And due to play one New Zealand show, Live Nation announced today, yesterday actually, that due to demand, Stapleton will play at Auckland's Spark Arena on the 7th of March and 8th of March next year. He will be supported by Marcus King. The tour includes 3 Australian dates before landing in New Zealand, billed as Chris Stapleton's All-American Roadshow, and it goes down under. It's Stapleton's first time touring this region. Kentucky-born Stapleton, he has 2 awards. He won 2 awards at the latest Grammys, Best Country Solo Performance and Best Country Song, both for the single White Horse off his latest album, Higher. White Horse. I think we've got that. Should we have a look at it? See if we've got it. Tickets go on sale today at 11 o'clock, and you can go to Live Nation. If you want the link to that, go to onenews.co.nz. Look it up there with the Chris Stapleton. Go down to the bottom, Live Nation, and you can get your tickets. They go on sale tomorrow morning. Now, let's just see if we've got Chris Stapleton. I'm pretty sure we do. Let's see. How do we do that, Digger? We just go click that one. What was that horse? Live Horse, was it? The song?
Yes. White Horse.
Oh, okay. White Horse. I'll see if I've got it. I think I have. White Horse. But yeah, I've got it. So here's Chris Stapleton, and this is what you can expect if you end up going to the concert on March 7th, sometime, I think, March 8th, 7th and 8th, I think, and get your tickets this morning. 11 o'clock they open for sales. It's 6 minutes away from 7. This is Chris Stapleton. It's a quiet start. Beautiful, eh? White Horse, Chris Stapleton here at the Wireless 88.1 FM in Northland, Hawke's Bay and Wellington. Hope you're enjoying the program. Rowan Atkinson up next, and we'll have a look at the weather and then we'll head off and do our jobs. We've got to go out in the rain today, Digger, and move those cows off the hill, don't we?
Yes, we do. They've been munching away there. Getting a bit short on grass. It's going to get a bit muddy if we don't move them into the next paddock.
All right, we'll do that. Do that straight after this, 2 minutes away from 7 o'clock, and that'll be our lot. And I would like to be able to say you can get over to RCR Radio and have a listen to Paul Brennan. He'll be on at 7, but no, unfortunately, they're not on at the moment. They're on a money drive at the moment. They're trying to raise funds for to keep the show going. I don't think it's the end of them. I think it's, I wouldn't call it a ploy. I think it's a very clever marketing campaign, actually, just to make us realise that they say we need them. And I think we do. I think we do need them. I think there's some good people there at RCR. I don't know if I agree with everything that their backers have done over the last 3 years. Voices for Freedom. I'm not so sure about that, about them. They knew about Barry Young, the senior Ministry of Health whistleblower. And a year before Liz Gunn found out, and as soon as she found out, they spiked into action and got that information out, which they rightly should do. And, of course, what did the government do? They arrested Barry. He's a very brave man, and we need a lot more brave men like him to step up, especially in medicine, to step up and tell us. Or before I do go, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a weather update too before we go. I want to share this with you from the Hatchett Report. This is Dr. Guy Hatchard. Now, he was saying here, so how many Ministry of Health staff and associated contractors benefited from these vaccine exemptions? He said that he's made inquiries and that he's found that some staff are prepared to talk and they've leaked information to him. One source told him that 95 consultants in the Dunedin region alone benefited from vaccine exemptions. Another source has pointed to a group of doctors working in Northland who arranged among themselves to remain unvaccinated. The total appears to run into the thousands, really. And we know that because of the Official Information Act request, 11,000 exemptions were given. And it seems that those granted exemptions were restrained by gag orders. And that's what I was saying yesterday. That's what they'd done. In other words, they could not tell anyone that they had been granted exemptions. And it was a secretive process that the Ministry of Health was anxious to hide from us, the public. In any case, any doctor advising a patient that mRNA COVID vaccinations might be risky, they faced disciplinary action from the medical council, and many were actually suspended. So medical staff allowed themselves to be manipulated into a position whereby, if they were unvaccinated themselves, they were still required to advise their patients to vaccinate. A recipe for widespread hypocrisy in the health service, according to Dr. Guy Hatchard. This process was certainly approved by Dr. Ashley Bloomfield, who himself gained considerable notoriety by refusing vaccine exemptions to those among the public severely injured by their first jab, insisting that they had to continue with the vaccination schedule. Given Dr. Bloomfield's close working relationship with Jacinda Ardern and Chris Hipkins, it is quite likely that they both were well aware of the process and approved it. And also, opposition leaders, they were also likely kept in the loop. The criteria for granting exemptions apparently entailed an assessment concerning how vital staff were in the working of the health service. In other words, senior figures and those holding key surgical positions could actually insist they remain unvaccinated and continue to be allowed to work, whilst unvaccinated nurses, for example, could not gain exemptions and they lost their positions. If senior staff who wished to remain unvaccinated had spoken out publicly, the issue of the COVID vaccine safety might have been given a public airing. Instead, the Ministry of Health and the government kept a lid on all and any discussion. It did so through liaison with the mainstream and social media outlets to censor content and through tight control of staff. That was brought to you by the Hatchet Report. So there you go, man. Those, like I said, they should all be locked up. So that means that they had a gagging order on them to get their exemption. What a corrupt country we've been living in for the last 6 years. I mean, it's obviously been corrupt for a long time. We are one of the most corrupt little countries in the world. And we've got absolute criminals still in our parliament that all need to be locked up. Because they were in the loop, more than likely, according to Guy Hatchard. And he's a very good writer and a very good researcher. And he's hard to argue with because he's, you know, he's a top guy. And they're frightened, they're scared stiff of people like him and people like Dr. David Martin as well. They don't like him. And they're still running around pushing boosters. It's sickening. Unbelievably sickening. We've got to get these people out and we've got to vote in a proper political party, NZ Loyal, they're the only option. It's not Winston First. It's no good voting for him. An ACT, a National Labour, red and blue, it's the same thing. You're just going from communism to fascism. You're still enslaved. And you want to be free. And we want to be saying how our country is run. Not the politicians who are getting their orders from international groups like the World Economic Forum. That's no good. We can't have that. That's not how a proper democracy works with a constitution. Have to have a constitution if you've got a democracy. If you don't have that piece of paper restricting governments what they can do, they can import whoever they like. They could turn New Zealand into a Muslim country and have your hand chopped off for stealing, have your head cut off for doing different things, women having to be covered up, head covered and all this sort of nonsense. That's what they'll do if they got the majority. And the way they're breeding in our country, and we're not, we're not having as many children. So we're going to be, by 2050, if we're not careful, we'll either be China, or we'll be a Muslim country, a Muslim state. So we've got to wake up, folks, and we've got to take action. It's 6 minutes past seven, and I'm going to leave you with Kelsey Ballerini right after this from Rowan Atkinson. It's all about free speech. Six past seven, yeah. Bye. We'll see you on Monday morning. Have a great weekend.
It's my passionate belief that the second most precious thing in life is the right to express yourself freely. The most precious thing in life, I think, is food in your mouth. And the third most precious is a roof over your head. So my concerns are less for myself and more for those more vulnerable because of their lower profile, like the man arrested in Oxford for calling a police horse gay, or the teenager arrested for calling the Church of Scientology a cult, or the cafe owner arrested for displaying passages from the Bible on a TV screen.
This is The Night Shift, 88.1 FM, The Wireless.
Half of my high school got too drunk. Half of my high school fell in love with the girl next door.